If you hate the government, can you either do something about it or leave, please? 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 How can you hate everything? Are you gonna draw a damn anarchist sign on your palm?
Because I've been fucked with by aliens in my dreams. Dietitians, I missed you. How's it going? I hope everyone's doing wonderful. I'm really glad that you could make time for the Strange Diet broadcast once again. As I usually say every week, I'm always very thrilled to be able to bring this programming to all the fans, and I'm very thrilled that there are a handful of fans. So, once again, thank you. Okay, how should I do the intro this week? Should I try to be funny? Should I just, like, be more serious? I'm trying to, like, format this thing, and, like, I go through my notes, you know, and I go through all my rough drafts, and I'm just, like, I spent hours on this, and I just, by the end of this, I'm just like, why am I doing this? It's not helping. Why am I making these practice runs, basically coming up with these schematics to, like, formulate this thing? I think, like, there's a section of me that just wants to be, like, this diligent, you know, worker. There's this other section of me that just wants to, like, see, self? I told you, self, you're working hard on this thing. So there's a little of that. But when it comes down to it, I don't know if there's any productivity arising out of this extra work. You know, maybe it helps, though. You know, maybe next week I'm going to try to do it just off the wing. See if there's any success like that. All right, anyways, hey, cooking, you guys. How many of y'all love to cook? I'm going to answer that for you. I don't think any of you like to cook. Who in 2015 wants to, you know, spend their own time, energy, and actually money, too, doing laborious activities in the kitchen for themselves or for others on their own free time? It's not a common thing. I think that's why I get paid to do it for you. Last episode, I mentioned, this one was going to be about at least something I know about. That'll be a nice change up. Professional world of cooking. Yeah, I know it sounds boring when you actually say it, but it's not. There's going to be some stuff to look forward to in this episode, no doubt. We're going to mix it up, really get in there, and try to show the world, like, what goes on. Like, okay, that was one of the things as this little kid, like, when we're little, we have these just superhero-like appetites that, and they come with these just machine-like metabolism that just burn up everything. Everything. And then when you get older, like, things like that change. So anyways, what I'm getting at is, when I was a little kid, I was very into eating things. I'm still kind of into eating things, by the way. So one of my biggest, like, you know, when you're a little kid, you wonder, like, why is the grass green? You wonder, why are the clouds white? You know, you just kind of wonder everything. One of my biggest mysteries about existence was how do you, when you go into a restaurant, how do they make all that? Are they really cooking it? Is there somehow just like they know what we're getting ahead of time somehow and it's already done? I didn't understand how any of that worked, and now I do. Surely, if anything, I thought to myself, no doubt in my mind, above all else, I know in my heart that someone's not actually back there cooking it right when they find out about the order. How could someone do that? How could someone cook for all them people at the same time? Even if it was like a team, I just felt in my heart there was no way that is what was going on. And I just accepted that for years, though. Like, I don't know what they're doing, but I know they're not really cooking it. So there you go. That's what happens in my naive mind once in a while. Dietitians, I'll just take myself to these places, set up camp, in these caves of my ego, like these little compartments that I don't normally get access, you know, and I just make myself believe things that aren't even real sometimes. But as long as I believe something, like, I'll feel better. Some piece of me will feel better. It would be unfair to pigeonhole religions into that cave of ego, but I'm going to do it anyways. You know, you knew I was going to do it. You knew I was going to do it, so I'm going to do it now. What if, like, oh, I hate that. What if I'm, like, the biggest anti-proponent, the reponent. I'm, like, the biggest reponent of the what-if clan, the what-ifers, the what-if tribe, the what-if congregation, the what-if, you know, of all those what-if factions that exist. Even the offshoot branches of the what-if colony, even those little, you know, residential in the what-if mountains, even those little clans up there. But what if that's like one potential spawn of religion? Gonna stop quickly because we're no longer talking about cooking, which is what we need to do. That's what always happened to me in school. We'd be in social studies class, and she'd mention something about the river, and then all of a sudden I'd want to delve into marine biology. Well, where does the Mesopotamia River lead? But people just need to believe in something, and they need an answer, so they just create a religion. What if that happened? There's just like one little thing about the what if.
You are listening to the Strange Diet Broadcast. Keep it locked down every week for your own personal taste of Radio Liberty and subscribe on iTunes, the Windows Store, or your favorite web browser. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/strangediet for other subscription options and join the Dietitian Coalition.
Yes, dietitians, please, if you enjoy the show and you enjoy what the Strange Diet Broadcast brings to you, whatever small contribution you can make to the show, even if it's just a quick like on social media, that does get noticed and it's much appreciated. Reciprocation is more critical than perhaps the average listener necessarily represents. So, if you have a spare moment or two to maybe check it out on Facebook, hit it up with a like. Somehow, maybe even just give it a share on whatever you do, Pinterest, Instagram, or any of that. Maybe just share it on your social, maybe your own personal page. And even if I don't know about it, you know, it gets felt, you know, I feel it. So if you're in the mood to make just a moral contribution, like said, you know, that's all love, and I highly appreciate and definitely take comfort in that. So, just putting that out there real quick. Anyways, I wanted to, like, kind of just jump into, like, where, how to begin this whole cooking, like, dissection. I guess it's going to be a little bit like biology. We're going to, like, if cooking is this recently living animal, we're going to dissect this thing. Or should I just keep going on with my personal life first? I don't know. That was going well. I just got a haircut today. I feel nice. I feel, like, clean about that. That's a new feeling. Haven't had that feeling for quite, so it's been just about a year since I cut off my hair when it was long, so I'm still getting used to it, and I gotta say, I'm loving it. It's like this homecoming. So I got a haircut today. My wardrobe is improving, getting nicer looking, cleaner clothes. Alright, I think that's about it. I think that's about enough. So a little bit how I wanted to
begin this whole topic where I'm going to dissect, once again, like it's biology class, is not that I really care about the show Mythbusters. I've only seen it a couple times, but like there are some myths about professional cooking that I know now. Let's see if you'll be into knowing this or not. The one myth is like they're doing weird, nasty things in the kitchen. That myth is half true. Now, before you feel like you get gypped, you know, I'm not trying to get away from truly answering this myth, but whether or not there are nasty, weird things going on in the kitchen, that's half true. And what I'm saying is there are places, it really does happen, where weird, nasty things will go on in the kitchen. I will say that most places know. It's no one gets away with it, and no one even wants to do it. I'll say from being in the business that basically everywhere I've worked, it doesn't happen. And you don't get positively basically compensated, you know, either socially with the guys you're working with or with your money. Like if you want to work like that, you don't get paid good. So that myth is half true, but there are places where they've just found a bunch of lazy people who don't care, and like things can get weird, and I've seen it before. So it's out there. I think that a good strategy nowadays is you can look at the local reviews, and I recommend that. Good reputations. You know, people get in restaurants will get the good reputations if they deserve them. Pay a little more for your food sometimes if you need to go out. And I can tell you, a lot of times it's worth it. We got a nice little clip on the French Laundry in the Napa Valley coming up in just a minute. You can see exactly what I'm talking about when I'm saying sometimes it's worth it. There's some people working there doing some amazing things with their skills. That's another myth, too, I think. I think a lot of people believe that it's like a relaxed, laid-back thing that, you know, since it requires, you know, you don't have to go to college and it's, I guess, you know, viewed as an entry-level job that it must be easy and, you know, on and on. But in my experience, this is a very serious field where people are taking themselves and taking the job very seriously, which makes it hard to maintain. Like, honestly, if someone really wants to get into cooking, it is not a stupid person's job. Like, it requires a smart person to be able to get it done. A lot of multitasking, lots of pressure. There's no feeling like the feeling of burning something in the oven while your chef is standing there. Like, there is no feeling like that. There's extra pressure when it's something like that. When you burn it in the oven, from a restaurant's point of view, there's some bad things happening. There's the waste cost. They're just throwing something, like whatever. What if it's something, there could be something expensive in the oven. There could be pies, you know, cakes in the oven. There could be anything in the oven. And if you burn something in the oven, it's a loss of money, and sometimes more than anything, it's just an unavailability of something on the menu, which is a serious thing. And it could be a loss of your job. To top it all off, a nice cherry on top of the burnt in the oven cake that you just made. Good job. Or maybe your boss makes you eat a piece of this cake in the back in front of everybody. Stuff like that happens. How about the feeling of getting something sent back because you cooked it wrong? Or something was raw still? Or you forgot something? So the waitress comes back with the plate of whatever and says, "Excuse me, this is wrong." And that's a really embarrassing moment. Over the years, that's been one of my main things over the years. You just avoid doing that because of how bad it feels. If you're working in the right place, that'll feel really bad because you will get teased about it. And a lot of cooks get run out of their kitchens for shit like that because they just... That's what I'm saying. It takes a smart person to be able to do this stuff. One of the benefits about this job is a lot of places don't drug test. I'm just going to leave it at that. That does inspire a lot of crazy ass stories from work, though. I don't know if I should tell any of them. If I start telling one, I'm going to want to tell all 1,500 of them. I got stabbed at work one time. You want to hear that story? Maybe I'll tell that story later in the future. There's knives all over the kitchen, you know. Yeah, I got stabbed. That's right. No, I didn't die. No, I didn't even have to leave work. Someone poked me in the palm with their knife on accident. Well, that's getting stabbed, all right? That stuff can happen. Every day is a battleground when you're a chef. There's nothing like the adrenaline rush that I got witnessing two Oaxacans verbally abusing each other, each with knives in their hands, in Spanish. These two gangster Mexican guys. That's a thrill, all right? I'm not even sure how it really comes to that point. Like, I'm a cook. I used to get all crazy furious as well. I mean, I kind of know what's going on. It's a high-pressure job, low money. Usually we're all kind of just scraping by in our outside lives. And we all just mingle together at work, and we all freaking... Basically, we fight over whose life sucks the most at work. And most of my jobs, you know, we're all making jokes and making comedy out of the lack of happiness we all share. It's this great communal place where we all can go. And what makes it worse is the whole time you're there, you're sweating. Okay, it's hot in the kitchen. You know, there's a bunch of food flying around. It's messy. It's just a hell of a place. You know, it'd be a great place for someone who wants to work outdoors, but maybe they're allergic to, like, plant material. It's a lot of the same things. Lots of moving. Okay, myth number 4 or whatever we're on, cooks are commonly overweight people. That's mostly untrue. Cooks are skinny, I'd say, more than anything. You have to lean to one side of the spectrum. I say cooks are skinny people. They're moving around a lot. They have access to healthy options if they, you know, if they're conscious of that, you know, and if they care. Cleanliness matters in most cooking environments. You know, the employees themselves seem to care a lot about that. And I can speak from personal experience that in better physical condition you are, man, that's the easier anything is to take care of at work. You know, and that's just like true. You know, you look good, you feel good. Let's say your body is fit, you know, you're just in a good mood because it's easy to get your mood thrown off standing in that hot environment. So that's one myth about cooking that's not true. Like, most cooks are not just like these overweight people who love eating. Most of the time, those aren't the people that get hired to begin with. Fuck yeah, dietitians, listen to this song too. That's the other cool thing about being a cook. A lot of places you get to listen to the radio at work. It's one of those jobs, too. Faceless One by Hate Eternal. Anyways, I'm going to throw on that segment about the French Laundry, about what it takes to work there. These boys right here are truly the best of the best, and the ones who are making it an art form, and they're also the people from the West Coast.
You must be persistent, dedicated, and have an extreme drive.
What did you tasting? One person is no shellfish, eggs, or nuts.
I decided to go to the French Laundry, eat dinner, and turn in my resume afterwards.
Two bass. One is no shellfish.
Nothing happened. I called, and I called, and I called, and I called. called and he wouldn't answer, and it would be somebody else, and I'd be, it was Thomas Keller, and they would say, no, he's not. So I said, thank you, and I called back later whenever I could, you know, really reach him. Eventually, he granted me the opportunity to actually stage and try out for a position. So I did that. I worked at stage for one day, tried out making crepes in the kitchen, picking herbs in the garden, different kind of things, helping the kitchen. And basically, Eric and him talked, and Eric was a chef de cuisine at the time. And I was fortunate enough to get the job. I started as a commis. I worked as a commis for about 7 months. Moved up to the cheese station, worked there for about 6 months. Moved to Garmanger, worked there for a couple of years. Worked meat station, worked SAS, which is a sous chef station. And then was promoted to a sous chef when Corey Lee came and was a chef de cuisine. I feel strongly, you know, commis should start out doing prep work and really get proficient with their knife, proficient with the different skills and acquainted with the restaurant before they can move up. Everybody here, they come and they start, if at all possible, as a commis position. That's how I grew up in the kitchen, and that's how I really believe. That's what made me who I am today. And I think that's important for other people to do the same thing. It's very important for us that everybody understands the language, the culture. We focus on training the different stagiaires, externs, commis as they start on, and then evolving into chef de partis. A true chef de partie is a chef of a station. I mean, exactly what it translates to. It's they're the chef of the station. So if, and that's exactly what the way I treat the chef de partis here. If they did not order the salmon they need for the cornets tomorrow, they will hear about it. If they do not order their produce, if they do not clean their station properly, run their station properly as a chef, you know, that's their restaurant. They're the chef of that station, and they need to be mature enough to be that way. Otherwise, how are they going to be a chef out of the restaurant one day? I really take on Thomas's philosophy, which was when I was a chef de partie, we would sit down and we would write the menu with the chef, you know, and he would be there and he would ask me the question, you know, if I was working Grand Manger, what do you want to run tomorrow for a salad? Okay, well, chef, we have beautiful asparagus in the house. I'd like to do an asparagus salad. Okay, well, what would you like to do that with? Well, I was thinking maybe asparagus. Maybe it's white asparagus with rhubarb, black truffle, mash, and almond. And he says, okay, well, you know, how do you want to do the rhubarb? How do you want to do the asparagus? How do you want to do the truffle? How's the mash? And it's starting to pinpoint. And basically, he's training me, and now I'm training the other chef de partis how to be a chef, how to really think about a menu, how to think about composing a dish and what's all involved. It's not here's a recipe, go create. No, we're trying to really raise people to think about the dish in its entirety, think about eating the dish, what it's served with, what utensils are being served with, what plate it's going to go on, how it's going to compose, you know, why it might be nicer to eat it this way than it is to eat it that way. So chef de partie, it's really the same level all the way through, but there's different stations that are a little bit more complex and complicated and intricate. Of course, meat being probably the most intricate and the hardest station to work here. So that chef de partie would be definitely somebody that I lean on the most. It's not necessarily cooking a vegetable and plating a salad. It's cooking the vegetables as well as cooking the meat, as well as, you know, managing over the butchering of the products and all these different items that are you know, they cost more money. They're much more difficult to do. They require much more technique, and make sure that they are mentoring all the other chef de partis and the newer chef de partis, because the person that's working meat has probably worked many other stations in the restaurant. We change the menu every day, and we're constantly trying to do better and better and better. So it's very challenging, and that's really what attracts a lot of people to here. You know, it's what attracted me to the place. It's what keeps me here is that constant drive and pushing yourself, because you know you're going to get better and better and better. Thomas, when I started, he was in the kitchen every day, and really taught us all a lot. And one of the most amazing things about him is, as he's grown restaurant-wise, he's also really grown into an amazing mentor. He's very trusting, and he wants the chef to take ownership in the restaurant. and he wants me to do the food that I want to do and to do it in the way that I want to do it within the same philosophy. And he understands, like, I mean, I grew up in a restaurant, so our philosophies are kind of hand in hand. He is there to offer any advice, you know, he's there to mentor, to talk about different dishes, to talk about flavors, to talk about mentoring the staff, talk about upkeep on the restaurant. I mean, he's hands off and unless you run it, but is also completely there if you need him, which is an amazing thing.
Wow. Dietitians, wow. That's the only thing I can say right now. It's almost like the song was more entertaining than that interview right there. I don't know what to say about that. I guess it's true. Cooking really isn't the most stimulating subject there is. You know what? I do it for 40 hours a week. I spend most of my life doing this, and it's for what? 10 measly dollars an hour? The other thing is, too, there's always that guy, just like this guy from the French Laundry you got to work with, who's like a little like more serious than you. And not that he's even any better than you, but since he's more serious than you, he like tightens up the atmosphere. And it's unnecessary. And one of the things about cooking is like you work in this close quarters environment with a bunch of different personalities and they got to blend. So if they don't blend, what happens? Well, anyone who's ever made a vinaigrette knows what happens. It just separates. Okay, dietitians, thanks for being there for me. Make sure you tell your friends about the show and make sure you personally decide to check back in a week for another episode of the Strange Diet Broadcast. You know, we're always going to break new ground, explore new territory on the show because guess what? The subject never matters. I think that's my favorite part about the show. The subject doesn't matter. It's just a fun ride no matter what it happens to be about. Could be interviews. It could be montages. You know, it could be music. It doesn't really matter, but we always have a good time. And I'm holding a lot of shit back right now because I don't want my current coworkers to decide to check out the most recent episode of the show and all of a sudden turn on me. So I'm going to leave some up to the imagination, but in conclusion, if you really love cooking, make sure you don't do it for money, because you're going to end up hating it. Down, out, ouch.
Thank you for supporting Strange Diet Broadcast. Please use the email address strangedietfuture@gmail.com to contact the show and when writing in for surveys taken. Please use this email address to leave questions, comments, and concerns about the show. And remember, whatever you say might make it onto the air.